The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for each and every one of you. Hallie, how are you?
I'm okay. First of all, I did just get a new haircut, in case you're watching the video version of this, available on Patreon. And unfortunately, because I have a cowlick along my hairline, it is forming sort of what I classically think of as like an Amish bowl haircut situation up top. That's first top of mind.
Sure. Is it just like it dries that way and therefore that's like the...
Yes.
The line that's going to... create.
Yeah, basically it's sort of like a cresting wave across my forehead where like the hair wants to stand up, so then like slowly it becomes shorter as you go towards the right side of my head, which like I guess I could have pointed out as a problem, but I'll just push it down. I don't know, Allison.
Yeah, just keep forcing it down on your forehead. That's clearly...
I'll just do it throughout the day. I just have my hand on my forehead. So that's personally what's going on with me.
Flattening it out.
And then on a larger scale, we're recording this on a Friday, April 4th, which is the week where Donald Trump issued tariffs that are, I guess, designed to crash the global economy for ... insert reason here. And I don't know. How you doing with that?
I don't know. Yeah. I also see people being like, it's so intentional. They're trying to crash the economy so they can buy up assets cheaply and like increase their wealth. I'm like, I don't even know if they've thought it that through. Like, it doesn't seem like people act like it's this,
I see
exactly what they're doing. And I'm like, no, I think it's just like a smash and grab. Like, I don't know if it's so thought through that it's like,
I think you're right.
I'm sure they're like, we'll get richer from this, but I don't think that they like know why.
I completely agree. Two things. One, I think this is a good example of when people want to run the company like the government like a company, you misunderstand most companies are badly run and fail.
Yes.
Often due to
certainly
human
all
incompetence.
Of his are.
And then Donald Trump and Elon Musk are not good businessmen and are just rich enough that they have had a bunch of brands that when they collapse or don't make money, they can either declare bankruptcy or get more money or get federal funding if you're Elon Musk. Like they are not necessarily great businessmen. So even if we were running it like a business, which makes no sense because that's not what a government is.
Right, because that's not what government is.
I don't want them to be running it. My thing on top of this is, and I've said this before, but it's like there's some interview recently where I'm like, I don't know why we're even interviewing tech billionaires. They've got nothing helpful to say.
Stop asking them questions. They don't have any answers.
If you don't have anything interesting or helpful to say, us on the left, we have the weakness of wanting things to be better and the world to be functioning, which is of course our Achilles heel. And they of course have the strength of being completely fucking insane and not caring if the world collapses.
Yes.
But I just feel it's like, I don't need to hear what a tech billionaire has to say unless he has a solution for what's going on. And none of them do because they're all a part of this. You're happy to see this happen for reasons that are beyond us.
Causes of these problems.
Yes.
There are no solutions to any of these problems.
So I don't need them interviewed. I don't need to see. But one good thing that... the Wisconsin Supreme Court election that Elon Musk tried to buy, it went to the liberal or a Democratic candidate. So, and the most shocking part is that the Republican candidate said, well, she won fair and square. And people treated it like he was like Jesus Christ himself. The fact that the idea that a Republican would concede an election. And it is kind of like that, where it's like, oh, yeah. I guess like there are like two rational Republicans left. I don't know how you explain this to yourself and not see that what you believe leads to this every time and always has. But I don't know. But that was good. A bump earlier in the week before the tariffs thing happened.
Yeah, that was a nice little like, oh, imagine if things kept going this way, and they won't. So,
but yeah, we'll take our wins. How are you doing, Allison?
I, you know, this is a tough time of year for you and I, and especially for, I feel, me, not to make it about
no,
me.
No, you're absolutely right.
On the East Coast, it's like this fabulous moment where it starts to get warm and you're like, yes, 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 yes. And like yesterday it was like 70 degrees. I like met my friend for a drink right after work. I went to the pool and swam in the middle of the day, and it was so, I wore a t-shirt. But that also means that things are blooming and my seasonal allergies are beginning to destroy my whole head. So
I'm so sorry.
I apologize for how all of this sounds. I hope it's not as bad as it feels.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't sound too bad. It doesn't sound bad.
I feel very congested, and also I was surprise at the dentist again yesterday.
Girl, we need to talk. What is happening? At a certain point, I'm like, even I'm like, we need to maybe get some second opinions in here.
So, they were like, your gums are healthy.
Oh, good.
You did it. They measured them. They were like, they're back to normal. And I was like, thank God. But yesterday I did have an appointment with a specialist who's like an endodontist, because they were like, there's a chance we have to redo your root canal from years ago. And I am like,
Allison,
I swear to God, I will kill all of you.
I don't even understand what that means. Like, they put a new one in and take it out again?
They were like, actually, it's not that bad because there's no nerve in your tooth, so it won't hurt. I was like, I have a hard time believing that. I just don't think that's true.
Good. Thanks for letting me know.
Even if that's true, that sucks.
Also, I have a dental appointment today, but it's just a cleaning because they're basically like, you got to come in every 6 months. I'm like, yes, I will. I'm so sorry.
I'm in every
so
six
I'm
months,
going.
Baby. I'll go every 3 months if they ask me to. So they were like, there's a chance. But they were like, it's not urgent. It's nothing major. But we think in the next couple months, we should maybe like redo that root canal. And I'm like, okay.
And it is like the mechanic where it's like, I trust you. I have to. I have no way of knowing whether or not that's
fucking
real.
Yeah. And I was like, they were like, are you in pain? I was like, no, I have like no pain in that tooth. And they were like, okay, well, you don't want the pain to start. And I was like, okay.
Well, I will say that's what's crazy about all the dental work I had to have last year is no pain. Like, I had two teeth break and there was no painless. And I was like, fuck that. I assumed the nerve was dead. And in both cases, both the nerve was fine. It just was like the top cracked off, which sucks. But I am grateful that in the end, it wasn't a painful experience. And I agree. Elsa, we got to get you in there. Redo all of them if they have to.
I'm happy to go in and like have them fix it. They were like, well, it's just like sometimes like, you know, old crowns, bacteria will grow. And you have to like go in and clean it. Like sometimes you just have to like take the crown off, clean it off, and put the crown back on. And I'm like, I guess, guys. I don't know.
And the thing is, like, you kind of have to trust them. And if you were to go to an unscrupulous dentist, it would be the perfect crime because you know, you and I aren't arguing. What I'm going to argue?
No, I don't know what's going inside my own head, and nor is it any of my business.
Speaking of the perfect crime, the perfect movie this week is a reverse ruined from our very own Allison Leiby.
Yes.
Please take it away, Allison.
But we are, you know, we're continuing on with Oscar winners in horror films. You know, this is certainly not a horror film. I would never watch one. I don't want to. But this is riding the line of thriller and a movie I'm obsessed with, A Perfect Murder.
Great.
Starring Gwyneth Paltrow, who obviously won an Oscar for Shakespeare in Love. Also, Michael Douglas and Viggo Mortensen. Did I look up if they've won Oscars? No. Does it feel like they have? Absolutely.
I'm sure they've been nominated. You talk, I'll look it up. I'll report it back.
Viggo, I feel like for sure was nominated for the Lord of the Rings movies. I feel like that was like when he would have gotten one. He's been in a million good things and he's such an incredible actor, but I can't remember.
Yes.
He's
been nominated several times. Let's see if he's won. Boy, I'll tell you what, again, he is a handsome man looking at this guy.
Well, there's a reason they cast him in this role, that's for sure.
Three nominations for Viggo: Eastern Promises, Captain Fantastic, I don't know that one, and Green Book, but no wins.
That's right, he was in that movie.
Which, like, one of those movies where I'm like, it's because it's him and, Is it Mahershala Ali? Isn't that, I want to say? They're incredible actors. The screenplay is just... Sure. I've never written anything that's been even nominated.
If you're 70 and like that movie, I understand why.
Shout out to you. And good performances. And then...
Yes. And Michael Douglas, did he win for like Wall Street or something?
Yeah,
like,
best actor, Wall Street, baby.
Look at this. So we got our two leads, two of the three are our Oscar winners. Directed by Andrew Davis, written by Frederick Knott and Patrick Smith Kelly. I would say this is my favorite genre of movie, and that genre is Michael Douglas.
Hell that's, yeah.
That's my favorite genre of movie. Like we've done
a,
the
him
game.
In a trench coat, like running down an alley, trying to
fall
you know.
In New York City for Michael Douglas in a long overcoat and leather gloves. Get out of here. That's as good as it gets.
And I think it's one of those things where I feel like as a young person, I was like, why is Michael Douglas like, because he was such a sex symbol in the 80s. And I was like,
yes.
What is this? But he has like a sweaty intensity that I do feel like a straight woman, you're looking for that kind of like, there's like a tweet that I saw recently where someone's like, I could never be an incel because I was raised on like silk shirt R&B. Like I should be out in the rain sobbing for the pussy.
Yes.
And I feel like Michael Douglas has that intensity where it's like everything he does, it's like a 1,000% that I feel like that is erotic, especially in the coked out 80s.
Yes, and he was like, as a young person, I like didn't understand it, and in watching these movies again, I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, I get what it's all about. Like, he is like, there is like a sexuality to him that I understand.
I felt the same way about like Tom Cruise as a kid. I'm like, I don't get it. And then older, I saw Top Gun. I'm like, oh well, okay,
yes,
I understand.
Yeah. And you're like the smile, the like boy. Yeah, he really
exactly
gets it. So, Hallie, have you seen this movie? I can't remember.
You know, I'm gonna be absolutely honest. I no don't idea. Remember it, it. There are so many movies from this era that are called A Perfect Murder. I've seen a ton of Michael Douglas movies. I've seen a lot of what I consider B erotic thrillers or thrillers of this era. So
yes, I would say this is an A. Okay. I would say this would is an A. This is an all timer for me.
I would say, I was going to say I'm 60% sure I have seen it, but I think it's more if you were to roll the dice 10 times. I would have seen it six out of the four, and in the four, I've never seen 1 second of it. Does that make sense? Like, I've retained nothing of it, though it's a familiar plot to me.
Yes, that makes absolute sense. So, Hallie, I have to ask, what did you think of the trailer for this film?
Again,
did you watch it?
Yes, I did. I do. I'll be honest. I'm going to say this. I am not the biggest Gwyneth fan, and that's not an indictment of the film. But I just don't, she doesn't do it for me. And I don't especially like her in a role where, like, Sexual Love is different because it's like a period piece. And the idea of romance and love is more at a remove that I think makes sense for her chilly demeanor. Or something like Tales of Mr. Ripley, it's kind of like the high status woman. Other than that.
Yes.
So it looked like exactly the movie I would see. I'm not the biggest Gwyneth fan. How do you feel about her?
I'm conflicted. Like, obviously, like, this is of the era that she was kind of like in her heyday. This was Great Expectations era.
Oh yes, her heyday,
like,
for
this
sure.
This is like, it's like, I don't know if I like her as an actress. I do like her as somebody in a chic bob in a coat walking through the Upper East Side. I think that's something
true.
She's good at.
She's very good at that.
And she does a lot of that in this film. And therefore, I'm like, she's good at this.
Rich Man's Wife is the role she was born to play. And she plays it to a plum. Yeah.
Yes. And Hallie, how scary do you find the concept of your spouse hiring someone to kill you?
Ooh, you know, I just think that I most likely will not end up with a she or a they that would do something like that. Not out of like, oh, I'll marry someone who's great. I just know I probably won't marry someone who's capable of carrying off a big lie. Right.
Yes.
I'm not going to be someone who's like very sly is probably not my future. But I mean, in general, it's terrifying. And we do hear these stories. It is, it feels like a crime of the past, though I'm sure it does happen. It's probably happening as we speak. Like the idea that we, instead of divorce or being like, you know what, I'm bailing on this. Like, this is not worth it. Which I feel like we're moving towards more of that conversation of like, just leave. The idea of someone, hunting me down instead of... confronting me or leaving. Yeah, it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So. Yeah, I think it's a very scary, you know, the person who knows you best can make the best plan. So
yeah,
a scary thing.
I feel like it's scary. It's less scary than if they just were to kill me themselves, like poison me. That's much scarier. Because yes. A hitman's like a little impersonal, but still scary.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a third party involved. And Hallie, as we begin, would you like to guess the twist in A Perfect Murder?
Guess the twist.
The twist is she hired the hitman to kill herself.
Ooh, okay. I'm interested. I'm listening.
Because she wants to frame her husband for her murder. Okay. And maybe she has terminal cancer and she knows she's going to die anyways. Does that feel like a 90s movie? Does that sound like a movie that maybe already exists?
That feels like such a 90s movie that I'm like, can we go back in time and write that and make real money?
Okay. All right. That is my guess for A Perfect Murder.
First up, build a time machine. Next, write that script. So let us begin ruining A Perfect Murder. We open on a loft in Brooklyn. It's dirty. Ooh. Industrial, filled with paintings. Are they good? Yeah. No, they're not good. No. They're not good. Is it photographs with paint splattered across them? Yes, that's what the art is. We're in Greenpoint, but 90s Greenpoint.
Okay,
so
hot.
It's before it was like all new development and trendy bakeries. It was an industrial, like very off the beaten path area. New Yorkers now know, of course, that is not what Greenpoint is. I would say it's still off the beaten path, though. As we move through this loft, we're kind of like following along like all the art. It's pretty disturbing. In the center of this giant loft, like studio living space, there is a platform bed and two people are fucking in it.
Of
yes.
course.
Brin.
And you see that art and you know that a hot person made it. That's not an ugly person's art.
No, it's terrible. Yeah. A hot man made it. 100%. That is what's happening.
He made it to fuck.
Yes, that's like the whole point of hot men doing art is like tricking women. On the nightstand next to the bed is a string of pearls, diamond studs, a ring, a Cartier watch. Obviously, a rich woman is slumming it here in this industrial loft that now I believe would cost $4.5 million.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Cut to the Upper East Side and we see Gwyneth Paltrow, who plays Emily Bradford Taylor, walking down the street. Chic little Bob. Fabulous coat, heading back to her Fifth Avenue apartment. She gets in the elevator, and it's one of those buildings where it's like the elevator opens to your floor. You still have a front
Incredible.
Door, but like you're the only door. Like
Incredible.
There's not other doors. Like that is
no, that's
that is
rich.
The dream. She opens the apartment door, and we are in like I don't even think it's a classic six. It's just like the most fabulous apartment I've ever seen. It's rich wood. It's like obviously expensive art. Park views, giant windows, just the whole fucking nine. And in the living room is Steven Taylor, her husband, played by the one and only Michael Douglas. He's in a tuxedo, almost like a what's the suit that men wear where it's like a white tie, white vest, black suit. It's like.
Oh, I don't know. Let me Google it.
I don't know. It's, you know, whatever. It's fancy. It's time to go. It's like four events. It's like not a tux, but it's like in the tux world. He's holding a martini.
White tie or tuxedo tails. And apparently is the most formal kind of tuxedo.
Yes. This is very, very, very fancy.
Ooh,
he's
okay.
holding a martini. No one plays rich like Michael Douglas. I'm sorry, like no one looks richer than Michael Douglas does.
His hair alone.
It's the hair. Mm. And he says, how was your day? Any progress saving the world? She kind of sees the suit. She's like, oh, I see you changed your mind about tonight. And he says, my dinner with the London clients fell through. They missed their flight. And he pours her a martini. And he says, here's to stolen moments. She leaves the room and is like annoyed. And she goes to change. And she's like, ugh, I guess we're going to this fucking thing together. We weren't gonna. He said he wasn't. And she's in her office and she's on the phone. And I will say, I don't find Gwyneth to be a sexy person.
No, I agree. It's,
but
yeah,
in this moment, she's wearing a white button down and then black lace, like, you know, where those like stockings that like come up like thigh highs, I guess is what they're called. And like black lace at the top
Hot.
And like just a white shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know. She's nailing it.
I do miss stockings. I feel like people don't aren't wearing heels or stockings, which I completely understand. I don't wear them either
yes.
most of the
no.
time, but they're hot and they're
it is a sexy look. She's on the phone and Steven walks in and she just immediately hangs up and she's like, oh, sorry, I tried to call the office, but nobody was picking up, so I guess it's fine. And he tries to kind of like, you know, get something started with her. He's like, obviously she looks great, so he's like, let's do this. And she's like, no, 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 we're in a hurry. We have to go. And he's like, I think you should wear this one. And he pulls down a dress from her outrageous walk-in closet. And I like that we're like in this movie, like we're 2 minutes in and we're like, things are bad. Like yeah. things are not good. The vibe is bad.
The vibe is bad.
The vibe is bad. And so Stephen and Emily arrive. They walk up the stairs into the Met. It's a big, fabulous gala. There's paparazzi taking pictures of them. It's a big, gorgeous reception in the Temple of Dender, which just made me want to go to the Met. It's been a minute. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like greeting colleagues, talking to other rich men in their fancy suits and their wives and their fancy jewelry. We see another couple is like bending the ear of a young artist named David Shaw, who is played by Viggo Mortensen. He's the sexy backed man we saw fucking in the middle of the studio earlier.
Gasp.
We know it's him.
Gasp.
He has like long hair and he's wearing like a black t-shirt underneath a black suit where everybody else is in a tux. And you're like, okay, I see your game, mister.
I also feel like every man there must be like, all right, well, this guy's going to try to fuck my wife. Like you see the guy, it's like, well, I gotta keep
eyes on
her.
You have to assume he already is.
Yeah.
So Emily's just like already annoyed at this whole event and she walks by him and she kind of like mouths something to him and keeps going. And then he leaves the people he's talking to and follows her into an empty gallery. And he's in this empty gallery and he says, I thought he wasn't coming. And she's like, he changed his mind. I tried to call you. And so he strokes her arm. And he's like, he doesn't know who I am, right? Like, it's like, he doesn't know what's going on here. And he says, do you want to have lunch tomorrow? And she smiles. And just as they're making their romantic lunch plans for the next day, Stephen walks into the gallery and says, I leave you alone for 5 minutes and you elope with a younger man.
Oh, Stephen.
I know. It's like he already knows what's up. So Stephen says, he's like, Emily is like, oh, this is David. He's an artist. I'm familiar with his work. And Stephen's like, oh, I'd love to see some pieces. And he's like, I assume Emily has your number. And he's like, nope, she doesn't. But you can just reach me through the gallery. And she's like, yeah, I'll give you the gallery's number. And then you can find him through that. And Stephen's like, okay, let's go. We have to go back to our inbred soiree, is what he calls this party.
Damn.
Which, not wrong. He grabs Emily and they kind of walk off and David stares at her longingly. The next day, Emily is at work. She, of course, works at the UN. She works for a U.S. the U.S. ambassador to the UN alongside her coworker, Raquel Martinez, who's played by Sarita Chowdhury, who I love. She's, you know, if you've everyone's seen her, she's been in a million things. But one of the things she's been in recently is And Just Like That.
Yes. Love
she's
her.
So fabulous. And so while she's at work with her coworker, also like Raquel Martinez, that woman is Indian. Like, no need to make her a different race.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. Where it's like we're playing pretty fast and loose. Ultimately, just give her a new name. There's no reason to do this. The 90s.
Downtown on Wall Street, Stephen is at work with his colleagues. He's a finance man. I don't know what he does. He's a finance man. One of his colleagues, though, is David Eigenberg, a.k.a. Steve from Sex and the City. Oh. Back-to-back And Just Like That actors in two subsequent scenes. You love to see it. But apparently things are happening in the markets. I don't know. It felt like really intense to be watching this the other day because I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no, the markets.
It is Chernobyl-level catastrophic.
Okay.
Emily leaves work and she's on the train to Greenpoint. She's walking down an empty street. There's no one around and there's someone on the roof taking photos of her. But then we kind of see David's up on the roof and he like whistles to her and he's like, come on, gorgeous. Like, let's get fucking. But she brought him an espresso machine or espresso, not even machine, just an espresso maker as a gift. And she's like, oh, come on, like you deserve it. And like she starts making a coffee and he's like, just peak Viggo. Up behind her, licking her ear.
Oh, damn.
Touching her neck. It's it's so sexy. And he's like, you know, we could be in Belize at this time tomorrow. And she's like, and then they start fucking back on Wall Street. Stephen is staring out his window very intensely. We're cutting back and forth between Emily and David, kissing, having sex, being in this like beautiful, not beautiful, but disgusting studio. It's very hot. Mm-hmm. And Stephen just kind of standing downtown on Wall Street. Angry. They're laying in bed, embraced kind of post-coitus, and David's landline in the studio rings. And the machine picks up, and it's Steven. He says, I'm finishing up early today, and I want to come see some paintings.
Uh-oh.
What about 6? Emily is stressed. And she's like, what are you going to do? And David says, I guess I'll call him back.
It'd be kind of weird if I didn't, wouldn't it?
You're playing with fire, David.
You're going to get so upset about it. Why'd you give him my number?
I didn't.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. So Steven is sitting in a dive bar and David walks in. And he was like, yeah, sorry. I need to meet you here because it's really hard to find my loft. It's easier if we just meet here and we walk over. And on the way out, Steven drops a couple envelopes and he's like, oh, sorry. And David picks them up for him, gives them back to him. He's like, sorry, I have to mail those later. And Steven is like, I see what Emily is drawn to looking around the loft. He's like, your art, it's very trashy, but potent. Okay. The art is bad. The art is very, it is like throwing paint on top of other works of art. That's like what.
And you could, but you could imagine why people at the inbred soiree. I feel like that's very inbred soiree.
Yes. We'll find that appealing. They're like, oh my God, this is boundary pushing. Yeah. It's just bad art.
We love pushing boundaries. We love inbreeding.
Yeah. Those are our favorite things. So Steven's walking around. He takes off his coat. He sits on the bed. And as he sits down, David realizes that Emily's ring is still on the nightstand. But Steven doesn't see it. So Steven says, I'm jealous of you, David. I'm envious of you. You know, you have one of life's sublime experiences. And David's like, what is that? And he says, fucking my wife.
Gasp.
And David's like, no, what? That's crazy.
That's crazy. I could never do that.
And Steven's like,
who's your wife?
Yeah,
he's got to be fucking other women. There's no way. Come on.
No, a guy that looks like this living in Greenpoint in the 90s, like, he is cleaning the fuck up.
They found him dead, drowned in pussy.
Steven sees right through it. He's like, no. Like, I know you're fucking my wife. And and David says, we're in love. And Steven's like, not a fucking chance. Like, she's in love with you, but you're in business. You did not meet my wife by chance. You didn't study at Berkeley. He kind of listed off an artistic resume when they were at the museum. And Steven's like, you didn't study at Berkeley. You've been to prison. Your real name is Winston LaGrange. And he spouts off like all of this history of like his criminal record and growing up and all of these things. And he's like, you're trailer trash. You've been in and out of courts. And your new mark is my wife. And Steven explains that even if she left him and married David, her advisors would make sure she signs a prenup. He'll never get a penny, which is clearly what he's after. Like, that's not a chance. And like, so David's like, okay. And Steven's like, you have two choices right now. I can tell Emily who you are and you die a starving painter, or you can cash out and have $500,000 tax free. And David's like, what's the 500 grand for? Like, free money? And he says, no, not free money, just tax free. You have to kill my wife.
Bop, bop.
Boom. We are in. He says, I'll give you $100,000 now and I'll give you the other $400,000 when she's dead. And David asks, like, you know, why? And Steven's like, I'm not going to answer that. I don't have to answer that. And David says, what if I call the cops? And Steven's like, you know, I know of a woman in Boca Raton who got, you know, she was having an affair and then somebody robbed her of all of her money. And the cops are still looking for the guy. They have a picture, but they don't have a name. That'd be 3 strikes, right? That's a long time in federal prison.
Winston, you've put yourself in the crosshairs here.
And so Steven says, come to the apartment tomorrow at 11 a.m. I assume you know where I live. And he walks off.
Damn.
And on his way out of Greenpoint, he's wearing leather gloves and he stops at a mailbox. And the envelopes that he had that David touched, that he has not touched, he puts a ransom note in it that says, ain't love grand, cut out of magazines, you know, classic ransom. And like a dozen photos of Emily and David kissing that somehow I assume had a private investigator take some photos. So he seals it and puts it in the mail. So he's mailing ransom blackmail
And this is where I'm like, doesn't that, I almost feel like that complicates things versus like just like, to me it's like, what if you framed it as a stranger murder or a mugging? That seems like way easier to like create confusion around. Like if you create a paper trail, it's like, I don't know. But again, I would never be able to pull this off to begin with. So that's just my hearing this.
The details involved in this are beyond both of our grasp.
Oh, absolutely. We would just be like, oh, I'll just go to prison. I'm not even a killer. I'm just going to
I can't even. Just like, I can't do this.
Pre-prison for me.
Barely live my life. At a bar somewhere downtown, Emily and Raquel are talking, and like Emily's telling Raquel about the affair, and Raquel asks like, are you in love and are you gonna leave Steven? And Emily says, Steven doesn't care about who she is, he only does things on his terms. He's like not the great guy that everybody sees this like rich power couple walking around New York, but like she's like, it's actually not good at home, and there's no chance that he knows what's going on.
Oh, Emily,
I know. And Raquel asks, like, does David know about your family and all of your money? Because she's, like, independently wealthy from her family. And she's like, no, no, it's not like that. Like, he just loves me. We're just also, it's fucking like, a lot.
Girl, he can see your hair, your skin, your underwear, your clothes, your coat, your jewelry. He knows. He can smell money on you. And I'm sure you smell fantastic.
Yeah. And Raquel's like, you're so in love, you're not even wearing your wedding ring. And Emily's like, oh, shit. I left my wedding ring at David's.
Rookie mistake.
Bad move. So she gets home and Steven's like, I went to David's loft. Emily, you're right. He's so talented. And she's like, did you buy anything? And Steven says, well, I made him an offer. The next day, Emily goes to work at the UN. She immediately calls David and she's like, I left my ring at your place. And he's like, don't worry. I put it away. He didn't see it. It's no big deal. Meanwhile, in his loft, David is emptying out like all of these like papers and art from like a giant like art briefcase. What those big like
a portfolio? Yeah,
like a portfolio. That's the word I was looking for the whole time I was writing this.
Or a valise? I think a portfolio.
A valise?
Right?
I think a portfolio. It's big. It's like it's big. Oh, it's a large flat-ish rectangle.
Black stockings, art portfolios, love.
Yes, I mean this movie is hot from top to bottom. And what he's emptying out of it is like a bunch of news pieces about Emily and her family money and her wedding to Steven and all that. So it's like he knew that she was a rich lady. Like it's unclear whether he's in love with her, if this is a mark or if this is just like, I did meet this hot woman and I am fucking the shit out of her on her lunch hour. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, like what offer did Steven make you? And David's like, oh, it's for a piece you've never seen. And I'm so sorry. I have to cancel our lunch plans. I'm going to be busy. Because he rushes uptown to where Steven is at the apartment on the terrace overlooking the Central Park, the reservoir. I mean, get it. They're on 91st and 5th. And I'm like, it's chic as hell. Steven's looking down on the street and he sees David approach the building with his big like briefcase. David looks up as he walks in. And he sees the security cameras at the entrance of the building. David's walking through the apartment. He's like, oh my God, so much good art, but like all rich people buy the same art. It's just so people know what kind of art you have. And Steven's like, come out on the terrace, like, let's talk. And he explains there was a robbery last year. They think the intruder got in through the driveway gate. There's a granite facade that blocks the security cameras, but it's like for looks and no one wants to take it down because it looks nice. So that's still like a blind spot for the cameras. So you'll enter through there. And he explains, I'm going to leave at 8 p.m. The gate takes 5 seconds to close. You can slip right in. And then you take the stairs to the service elevator. And then the key to the front door also works on the service entrance that's in the kitchen. He says, I'm going to take a key from Emily's keychain before I leave and put it in a magnetic box. And right here under, like he's showing him around and he's like in the service hallway or whatever. And it's like a magnetic box that goes underneath a pipe. Like that's right outside the door. And Steven says, I'll be at my regular card game. The service entrance door is always deadbolted. I'll leave it undeadbolted. She won't even notice. She never checks. It is always locked. And he says to David, like, enter at 9:30. She'll be in her nightly bath. And David's like, why not just kill her in the bath? Which, like, okay, bro.
Grow up.
Like, and Steven's like, that looks like cold-blooded murder. This has to look like a surprise from an intruder that neither of you was expecting. Mm-hmm. And he says, at 10 p.m., I'm going to call the landline and the kitchen will pick up. It'll pick up at the kitchen. Emily will come and she'll answer it. And that's when, as David says, a tragic confrontation will ensue.
Emily will answer the phone. You'll enter and a
tragic confrontation will ensue. It should appear to be stupid and spur of the moment. I've always thought that bludgeon has a spur of the moment sound.
He has to beat this woman to death? Like, come on. At least a gun, it's like you could do it quickly. It's like you have to beat your lover to death. That, because that is, say what you want to bludgeon, like that's, in real life, that's not an easy way to kill someone. Like,
no,
there's so many variables. It's not like one strike and they hit the ground. Like, that's an insane way to try to stage a murder. In no offense to these gentlemen, in my opinion.
No, absolutely correct. Also, like, allegedly, he does love her, which is a brutal, like,
yeah.
So
he loves money more.
He loves money
and
more.
Not being in prison, I suppose.
And Steven says, you know, the safe is in the other room. Mess around with that, I guess. And then just leave the same way you came in. And David says, what happens if the plan goes to hell? And Steven says, it won't. They go into his office. Steven gets $100,000 in cash out of his safe. And David's like, all right, when is this? And he's like, tomorrow. He's like, tomorrow? Jesus Christ. Bro. Yeah. Like, that's so soon.
Damn.
He's like, my card game is tomorrow. You'll do this tomorrow. David takes the $100,000, puts it in his briefcase, and leaves. Hallie, I have to ask, at this moment in the movie, what would you do?
What would you do?
I almost certainly would not bludgeon Gwyneth Paltrow to death. I would not have it in me. First of all, I'm a lover girl at heart. Second of all, I just feel like there's too many variables. I know that I would fuck it up. So even assuming everything went well, based on what Steven's saying, I would fuck it up somehow. I know that about myself.
Yes.
Also, I think he has, to not at least have the question in my mind, is this guy setting me up, seems very foolish. This guy knows you're fucking his wife. He's a rich man you know nothing about. He knows
this
everything
about
you.
This is all happening in 24 hours.
And like, it just seems like you got to assume this guy is setting you up to go to prison or God knows what. So I think based on both my own incompetence, which I am, I've accepted, and also my probably accurate suspicion that this is in fact a more complicated plan that I am going to be the patsy for. I wouldn't do it, Allison. What about you?
No. I would probably just like take the $100,000 and run. I know, obviously, like, he threatened him with, like, I know your whole history. I will turn you in for, like, the other crimes that you've committed that, like, they don't have on you. But I'm like, I don't know. Or just don't take the money and be like, I'm so busy.
Be like, no, I'm just not doing this. This is the easy way. He could just say no. Okay, you want me to stop fucking your wife? Look at me. I'll have somebody else's wife by tomorrow. I'm going to murder her.
There's a million wives that want to fuck him.
Yeah, you want to call the cops, knock yourself the fuck out. I reinvented myself before. If my movie would be called An Incompetent Murder, and it would be 15 minutes long because I would immediately be caught by the police.
Yes, I think that would be a fabulous short to make.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
So the next day, the housekeeper is preparing a roast. She puts the meat thermometer in. She puts it in the oven. It's like, ooh, that's going to be ready when they get home. And Emily packs up from the office and leaves to go meet David for her romantic lunch. But as she's walking down the street out of her office, a car door opens and Steven gets out.
Uh-oh.
And she scowls. He says, that's not happiness to see me, is it? And she's like, no, I'm surprised. And he's like, I had a hole in my schedule. I wanted to have lunch with my beautiful wife. And she's like, oh, I was going to do some errands. Like, I have to. And he's like, oh, like, get a new wedding ring. And she's like, ugh, one of the settings was loose. I took it in, but it'll be ready tomorrow. I'm going to get it. And he says, what if there is no tomorrow?
Oh.
And she's like, huh? He's like, wouldn't you want to have lunch with me if there was no tomorrow? If this was our last day? And she's like, okay. And so she like gets in the car and goes off with Steven. Meanwhile, David is in Greenpoint at his loft setting up a romantic candlelit lunch and has everything set out, but Emily is nowhere to be found. She's not there. She's at a fancy Manhattan power lunch with her husband, whom she hates. Steven steps away for a moment. He sees a colleague of his and they start chatting, and she sees his cell phone sitting on the table and she keeps eyeing it. She knows, like, I should just call David. I should tell him I'm not coming, but she doesn't. Back near Emily's office, David is he's gone into Manhattan to be like, where's my woman that I'm supposed to kill, but I also want to fuck and all this stuff. And he sees Emily and Steven get out of the car coming back from lunch, and he's pissed. Like, she canceled lunch with him to have lunch with her husband who is not killing her. I don't know. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. Emily can't win in this.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation for her. David's back in the studio. He's working on his art. His art at this point is a giant blown out photo of Emily's face that he is throwing paint across and destroying.
Oh, Lord.
And his landline rings and he doesn't answer, and the machine picks up and it's Emily. And she's like, I'm so sorry I had to miss lunch. Steven just showed up. And she's like, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. I have to tell him tonight. And David like immediately picks up the phone. He's like, I'm here. Don't tell him tonight. And she's like, I don't know. He was being really weird. I feel like he knows. I can't keep living like this. And David's like, he doesn't know. There's no chance he knows. He says, just give it one more day. I'll help you. We'll figure it out together. But just don't tell him tonight. Tonight being when he's been paid to murder her.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the penthouse, the housekeeper pulls the roast out of the oven, washes off the meat thermometer, and puts it in the sink. And she yells like, good night. I'm heading out. Good luck with being rich or whatever the fuck you guys do. And she leaves. And Steven has the place to himself before everything is set to begin. And he walks through the kitchen. Everything is in order. Emily comes home off the elevator and walks in the open front door. He's left the front door open. She puts her bag and Hermes Kelly on the table. And it's like, okay, that's money.
I don't mind if I do.
On the little table in the entranceway. And she puts her keys in a little tray that's on that table. And Steven's like, well, how was the rest of your day? Like, what's going on? And she's like, ugh, I don't want you to go to your card game tonight. I want you to stay here. I want to talk to you. And he's like, it's too late. And he's like, they'll never find somebody to fill in for me at the card game. And she's like, oh, okay. And she's like, all right, I'm going to go take my bath. And they're both like uncomfortable, but like neither will be like, hey, what's happening in our relationship?
Rich
Did
people.
You hire someone to kill me? Are you fucking an artist? What's going on? So Emily is undressing, and while she's getting undressed and drawing the bath, Steven goes and removes her house key from her key ring and puts it in the little magnetic case that goes under in the service entrance. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, she's unzipping her knee-high chocolate suede boot, brown suede boots, and it's like, ugh, this is 98, you know, like this is the
so
best.
When we started, I was like, okay, she doesn't want to divorce her husband because she doesn't want to lose this status of life. But then we find out that she's the rich
that
one.
She's also rich.
Why has she the money.
Then
why is she with him rather than be like, and even if he takes half or whatever, I'm like, it seems like she'll be fine. So I'm sort of less understanding her motivation to not just go. It's not like they don't have kids. Yeah. Like, we've not seen anything between them where it's like, if you leave me, you lose everything. And it doesn't sound like that way. So that's where I'm at, like, where I'm like, what is her motivation to not bounce? Also, she's young. She's hot. Like,
yes.
I don't know.
She's young. Like, obviously, they don't have children. There's no, like, she has all, like, she's, like, has a trust fund of a ton of money that we get to, like, I think it is just, like, the 90s.
And also, white cis straight people. I feel like you're like, we will die
white
miserable in the same beautiful apartment before any of us. It's sort of a standoff, you know, a stalemate where nobody wants to leave. I can see that.
So she's he goes and puts, you know, he takes the key off the key ring. He puts it where it's supposed to be for David to come. Steven, you know, he locks the servant entrance. He doesn't deadbolt it, just like he explained. Emily's in like a beautiful white silk robe, just like walking around a massive primary bathroom suite. I'm just like, I just want to be rich. It's so annoying. She's like getting ready to get in the bath. And like Steven appears in the closet out of nowhere. And she's like, oh, you scared me. He's like, I just wanted to say goodbye. And he kisses her. And he says, I'll call you later. And Emily says, I might run down to Nick's for a burger, so I might be gone if you call. And he's like, you shouldn't do that. You should reconsider. Like, our housekeeper, like, she made that her famous roast. Like, don't leave. Just eat that. And he says, wish me luck. And he grabs his keys and his cell phone, and he heads out for the night. Steven drives out of the driveway. As he's driving out of the garage, he sees a figure, obviously David, up against the gate, who slips in as his car goes out, just like he had instructed. The guy pulls down a ski mask and heads up the service stairs. Meanwhile, in the back, Emily's lighting like big rectangular gray candles. Like,
luxury.
So chic. The whole movie is just like neutrals, and like, but in like the rich way, not in like the way they are now.
Like
the
creams,
90s.
Creams, cashmeres, yeah.
Creams, dark woods, and grays and blacks.
Well, it's true. Like, I feel like now neutrality is like West Elm. Like, it's very cheap. It's like flat versus sort of. And I mean, people gestured elegance, but then I don't know. You see like Mar-a-Lago, and it's like, well, you know, they don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it's not aspirational in that way.
Yes. She's in the bath, and we're cutting between Steven and his card game with all these like rich men smoking cigars. Emily in the bath, relaxing, and a man in a ski mask slowly making his way into the apartment. He unlocks the service entrance to the apartment as Emily is in the bath. Obviously, she is rooms away. I can't imagine it. At his game, he's like, oh, it's time to call. So he pulls out a cell phone from his pocket, dials a number, and we see it goes to like a switchboard of some kind. And he leaves it on for a couple of seconds and then hangs up and slips it back into his pocket. And then he reaches into his pocket and pulls out another cell phone.
Okay.
And this is the one where he calls the house and the kitchen landline rings. It's right at 10 p.m., exactly as he said. And Emily hears it in the bath and she's like, God damn it. And she's like, no. And then she finally is like, okay, it's going to keep ringing. I'm going to get out. Steven mutes his end and just holds on to it, listening for what's going to happen.
Oh,
Emily,
God.
like throws on a robe, and she's like, answers the call on the landline. And she's like, hello? Like, what's going on? Who is this? And as she's just like getting frustrated, somebody jumps from behind her, pushes her over the dining room table. She is being attacked by an intruder. The man is strangling her. He has her over the kitchen island. She's trying to reach for knives. It's Gwyneth. Like, you're not like, she's not formidable.
Right. Yeah.
For like a grown larger man. Like, she weighs 110 pounds.
I think she's a little more yoked now because of Pilates, but during the 90s, yeah, she didn't have the arms.
No, she was just wafy and like, you know, fab, but not exactly like, you know. So he's like straight. She's like reaching for kitchen knives, and she gets one and she tries to stab him. He wrestles it from her. And as he has her like over the island, he's strangling her, his hand around her neck. She is reaching for anything she can find.
Oh,
she reaches into the sink. She grasps the meat thermometer and she jams it through the guy's neck. It is disgusting. And Steven is listening to all of it, and he hears someone die, and he hangs up the phone, and Annie's up for the next hand of poker. It all went to plan, according to Steven. Emily is laying on the ground in a pool of blood with this man, and Steven is driving home from the card game. He tosses that other cell phone out the window in his leather glove to be like, all right, well, that one didn't count. Mm-hmm. And Steven gets the apartment. He walks through. It's very quiet. He's ready to see his wife's corpse. And he goes into the kitchen. But before he can even see that there is a man lying dead on his kitchen floor, he hears Emily crying and he sees bloody handprints all over the foyer. He goes into the bedroom. Emily is there. She's crouched, covered in blood, screaming. And she's on the phone with 911 and says, like, he's in the kitchen. Steven goes and sees the dead body of the attacker. And you know, he's like, ah, David, God damn it. Why can't you do anything right? And so Steven puts on dishwashing gloves. He finds a kitchen tool, cleans it off, and then uses he jimmies the back lock to the service entrance to make it look like, okay, this didn't go to plan, so this needs to look like a random intruder, like, robbery. So he jimmies the lock so it looks like somebody's been fiddling with it. And then he starts searching the man's pockets for the house key because he's like, oh, he has the key. He got in. And he finds his keys and he takes it off. Like, he takes off what he thinks is his house key and rushes to the foyer just as Emily is, like, walking back into that area. And the police are banging on the door like, police, open up. Like, we're coming in. And he gets the key back on her key ring.
Okay.
Steve is like, okay. And so he, like, lets everybody in. And the police are questioning Emily. They're like, what the hell happened? Were there any strange sounds? Was tonight unusual? The lead detective is Mo Caramon, played by David Suchet. Great character actor. You'd recognize him. And the police, like, they're like, we're going to dust the service elevator, but this is, like, 15-20 minutes. We'll be out of here. This is such a clear B&E. And Detective Caramon is like, maybe.
Hell yeah.
He's suspicious from the jump. So he notices Steven's footprints around the place. And he, like, talks to Steven. He's like, I see your footprints around the, like, what did you interact with the deceased? And Steven's like, I got home and I went up to him and to figure out if he was dead or not. And he's like, was he? And he's like, he was. And then he points to a footprint and he's like, see there? Did you try and lean over him for something? That's like a crouched footprint. And Steven's like, yeah, I wanted to see if he was breathing, and he wasn't. And so the police pull the ski mask off of the dead man. The detective looks at Steven as it happens. They pull off the mask. It's not David. It's a total stranger.
Ooh, hell yeah. Perfect murder.
And Steven obviously is like, the fuck?
Great.
And Detective Caravan says, something wrong? And Steven says, aside from a dead man in my kitchen? And he says, no, I thought maybe you knew the man. And Steven said, I don't think so. Detective says, why is that? He says, I never forget a face. And the detective is like, okay, well, Emily has to come down to the station and give, like, a statement tomorrow, but that's kind of all for now. But the detectives and the police, like, kind of clock Steven. They're like, this, I don't trust
something
this.
Something weird. Also, I love it's like, that's all for now. It's like, well, did you take the body? Did you do the whole kitchen? Like, I just feel like this.
Right. Or is this just going to be a pool of blood in my kitchen
forever?
Right.
They'd be there all night. I got to imagine they're not. Maybe they'd send you to go to a hotel and then they, you know, like they did like, oh, we'll wrap it up.
Right.
It's
an active crime scene.
Yeah, I don't know.
A man died.
Yeah, I understand you're rich, but like, come on.
So the NYPD, They have the body in a body bag. They load it on a gurney into like a van going to the morgue. And there's a bunch of people outside kind of like watching like, oh, this is crazy for the Upper East Side. And one of the people watching is David.
Hell yeah.
So he's like, OK, the guy succeeded. That's Emily. Okay. Yikes. Down at the police station, Emily and Steven are in like a, you know, where they would question someone, but they're just giving statements. And the detective is looking on from double-sided glass. And Emily's just, like, struggling to answer. And Steven keeps kind of, like, taking control. And the officer's like, why don't you shut the fuck up and let your wife answer these questions? We are asking her, not you. Another officer brings in a piece of paper during the questioning. And he's like, we ID'd the guy. He's a career criminal. Like, that's just, you know, a million breaking and entering kind of situation. Like, this is, of course, like, this is it. Let's, all right, that... Case closed, I guess. And Detective Caramon also is in the room. He comes in and he wants to ask some questions, but somebody immediately comes up, is like, hey, your wife is on line 3. And she says it's an emergency. And he picks up the phone and starts speaking in Turkish, which Emily understands. And so she listens to him. And as he hangs up, she's like, how old is your boy? And he's like, aha, you speak another language. That's important. None of us can. And the officer's like, you have to stay in the city. And Steven's like, no, we're going up to her mother's, you know, so we're out of here. But we're not, none of us are suspects, so we should be fine. Back in Greenpoint, David is just throwing paint on a photograph of Emily. He's making art.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just starts sobbing. Like, obviously, he's like, this is awful. Like, I was hired by her husband, and I paid somebody else to kill her. But I do love, like, there was... I think she was a mark, but I think he also had some feelings for her.
Oh, as I feel like being a mark, it could be both, you know?
Yes. Up in what I assume is Connecticut, we see a beautiful Mercedes drive down a, you know, autumn tree-lined drive to a giant residence. I hate the rich. I want to be them. Emily hugs her mother, played by Constance Towers, who's fab. And she goes upstairs to lie down, and she's just, like, laying in bed. Steven gives her a couple pills, but it's all very sinister. He's like, you could tell, he's like, this isn't going the way I thought.
Right.
Like, you're supposed to be dead. Like, he says, by tomorrow, this will all be like a bad dream. And she says, what if there were no tomorrow?
Ooh.
Echoing what he said when he took her to lunch before he plans to kill her. Steven's in the office with Sandra, Emily's mother, and they're talking about, like, the world has gone crazy. How could this happen? And upstairs, Emily picks up the phone and calls David. He's asleep on his studio floor. He lets it ring, but the machine picks up, and she's like, it's me. Sorry, I just want to tell you I'm okay. I'm not in the city, but I'll call you as soon as I can. And while she's doing that, Steven clocks that the phone in the office has lit up, and he knows she's making a call. She's calling David. Steven excuses himself, and he takes a landline cordless phone. What were phones? He takes it into the bathroom, and he hits redial, and David picks up, and he says, Emily, but it's Steven, and he says, she's resting, but you and I have to talk. Back in the city on the Staten Island ferry, David and Steven are standing on the – it's like, thank you for using New York.
Yes, please. It is the fourth character.
It really is. So Steven's like, who was he? And David's like, just some guy. I can't be connected to him. And Steven's like, do you have any idea who you're dealing with? And David says, yeah, you're the guy who hired me to kill your wife when you wouldn't do the wet work. I don't know if I love that phrase.
Wet work. But also it's true. It's like, you don't know who I'm dealing with. I already got your ass once, bitch. I took your money and had somebody else do the work. So obviously you're not the smartest person in New York, are you?
Yeah. And he's like, well, what do we do now? And Steven's like, well, there can't be another attempt on her life immediately. That will look super suspicious. So, like, we wait. I'll let you know. And as he walks off the ferry, David yells, hey, Steve, do I keep fucking your wife in the meantime or what?
That's so funny.
Fab.
You know, that's the thing. It's like, I remember the Perfect Murder, and I feel like I don't remember. I remembered through the B&E, and I don't. All this is new to me. So all this is thrilling. I'm loving this.
Also, this movie I confuse with Unfaithful a lot.
Well, I think that's what I thought this was. That's what I was like. I think I may have seen one of these.
Yeah. That's like Diane Lane and Another Hot Man.
Yes, I have seen Unfaithful. And there's so many 90s movies that are exactly this plot. Richard Gere. I have. And
no, but then another younger. She's like fucking a younger.
Olivier Martinez.
That's Remember who him? It is.
Yes. Ooh, oh, Michelle Monaghan. Sex. Yes, I've seen this movie. Loved Unfaithful. Yes. And
Monaghan. Yeah, fab.
Okay, that's so funny.
So back up in Connecticut, Emily and her mother are having dinner, and she's like, Steven called and said he's sending a car tomorrow to bring you back to the city. The house is all cleaned up. And Emily's like, I'm not going back. I'm leaving Steven. I'm going to stay at Raquel's for a while. Down at work, Steven's on Wall Street, and things are bad. Things are bad. Like, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here. They say they have to unload positions to cover long sells.
Oh, no.
I don't know what that means. The markets are bad. And if I know anything about money, it's that he has less of it now. He's pissed because his wife is alive. Emily gets back to Manhattan. She gets off the elevator at the penthouse, and she goes to put her key in the front door, but it's not working.
Oh,
no. So she goes down to the front desk, and she's like, did Steven change the locks or anything? And the doorman's like, not that I know of. So she goes upstairs. She gets her key from the doorman, and she walks through the apartment, and it's all just like kind of like flashing back to like how terrifying that moment was. And she's hearing the phone ring, and she's seeing the blood, and everything is clean and back to normal, but it's like a very unsettling place. She's in the kitchen, and she's kind of like, you know, kind of like handling the knife, like the knives, the way she was, and then like all of a sudden Steven walks in, and she like grabs one to protect herself, and he's like, it's just me, like, what, don't worry. And she's like, this I can't stay here, this isn't working, I can't stay here anymore, Raquel is waiting downstairs, I'm gonna go stay with her for a little bit. And Steven's like, I don't love this, but also you're supposed to be dead. So downtown at Raquel's shitty apartment, JK, it's super cute and probably costs $2 million now. But it looks like garbage next to their giant penthouse. Emily says,
what do you think Stephen would do if he knew about David?
Well, Emilia, screwing around is the second oldest reason in the world to kill somebody.
Oh, really? And what would be the first?
Money, honey.
And Emily's like, okay, so here's the thing. Stephen and I don't have a prenup, and I do have a $100 million trust. He offered a prenup. I said no.
Oh, girl.
So now, like, not only girl. Is she screwing around, but if they split up or she dies, he gets money.
If she dies, he gets it all, right?
He gets it all. I mean, if she dies, he certainly gets it all.
Oh, well, she blew it.
Yeah, it's not good. Emily heads to work at the UN the next day, and the ambassador is like, are you sure you want to do this? And she's like, I do. And she sits down with a man named Mr. Harrington, who works for the FTC, or some kind of confusing financial stuff. And he says, Ms. Taylor, telling this information to anyone, even a spouse, is unethical. And she's like, I know, just keep going. And he explains, Stephen's been buying foreign bonds and using those securities as collateral, which is illegal.
Oh.
Apparently, I don't know. Probably not anymore.
When you said it, I'm like, that must be. Oh, yeah, under Trump, you're good to go, for sure.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do that every day if you want to.
Everything that's happened in this movie, I think Trump does want to legalize eventually.
Yes, 100%. Hiring an artist to kill your wife. Security fraud. All of these things.
Terrible paintings.
So the firm has apparently been under investigation for almost a year.
Ooh.
And Stephen doesn't have the money. He may be a powerful Wall Street finance douche, but these margin calls are coming soon. And when it happens, he's going to be fully wiped out. And Emily's like, got it. I now have two reasons that my husband probably wants me dead. So she heads down to the police station, talks to the detective, and she's like, I have some information about my husband. And she says, I learned he was hiding some serious financial troubles, and I thought that might be a reason he would, and the detective says, hire someone to kill you? Like, he knows. He knows what's going on.
You know what I mean? I just got to imagine, like, this is that kind of scenario where it's like, sure, wife murder. Yeah, like,
yeah.
One of the top five crimes
here. Where you kill
here.
Your rich young wife. And he explains, well, David was a suspect, but we traced a call he made on his cell phone to his company's switchboard quote system. And it was exactly during the time that the attacker was in your home attacking you. It's like the cleanest alibi I've ever seen.
Hmm.
And he's like, you know, everything about this is so perfect. Like, it all lines up to be a very simple B&E. This guy was trying to rob you. You surprised him and killed him, but it would have been a very different outcome. And he's like, the thing is, the man who attacked you, he was a regular guy with a wallet, an ID. He had a video rental card. He had all this stuff. He didn't have a single key on him, not for his apartment. That's very strange. And Emily kind of like sits.
Yeah.
And she thinks on it. She's like, that is strange.
It's bonkers.
He gives her the case file, and she's slipping through it, and she finds the address of the man who attacked her. She clocks it. And I have to ask, with all this information, Hallie, who
Ooh.
Will survive this movie?
Okay.
Who will survive?
So we have Emily, David, Viggo Mortensen, and Stephen.
Okay.
The detective.
Well, the detective's, we'll see him at the very end smoking a cigarette and flicking it and walking off in his own fabulous coat. So it's detective definitely going to, you're right, sorry, New York is the fifth girl because the detective is the fourth one. He's a real Miranda, that detective.
He is.
I think Emily's going to live. I think that Stephen's going to live, but he will be found out and exposed as a fraud and sent to prison. And I think David's still going to die. I think that David is still going to be our body count because this will be less. It's not about Stephen dying or Emily dying. It's about Stephen being exposed, humiliated, and his perfect murder will be flipped on him, and all of it will be revealed and pulled apart. That's what my prediction is.
Okay, so you think?
I think
they'll both die.
David will die. I think Stephen will live because it's more humiliating for him to live.
Okay, love that.
Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
At work, Steven is on the phone. It's a money crisis.
Oh, God.
That's all I can really say about that.
Well, we all know about that.
What the fuck they were talking about. I don't get money. But his secretary keeps buzzing in while he's like meeting with all of these guys, including Steve from Sex and the City. And he's like, there's a caller on the line claiming it's an emergency that has to do with Emily. So finally, Steven like is like, okay, put him through. He picks up the phone, and on the other end is a recording of Steven himself talking David through how to murder.
Perfect
he was
murder,
recording
perfect
it. Perfect murder.
Yeah.
Perfect murder.
Perfect you don't fuck with murder. Winston LaGrange. If this guy successfully got a new identity and has been grifting ladies,
yes.
Why would you think that you can't bullshit a bullshitter? You can't get
you
someone
not,
who's got it, and that's his profession.
You are not better than him.
Yeah.
You got.
I'm sorry.
So obviously David had recorded the entire conversation, and then
Hell
he gets on the phone and says, meet me at the diner now. I don't know how they said the diner in New York City in the 90s. I knew where to go, but they meet at a diner. And David explains, I want the rest of my money. And Steven's like, you didn't like do your job. Like I'm paying you for a thing that you didn't do. Like, what do I even get out of paying you the rest? And David said, you get what you have right now, which is time outside of prison.
Yeah, come on, man.
And Steven's like, well, if I give you the 400 grand, like, how much does that even buy me? Like, or how do I know you're not going to turn around and still give that tape to the cops? And he's like, come on, just give it to me. Give me my money. And he says, you have 4 hours to get me $400,000.
Damn.
Steven's like, that's going to take me a few days. He's like, not for you. I know that you can get money. Like, so go get the money or you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Emily, meanwhile, is heading up to Washington Heights to the address of that the attacker was listed in his file. And she's like walking around. Obviously, it's like Washington Heights. It's like it's a Latin and black neighborhood. And she's in like a cashmere coat and like a chic blonde bob. And it's like, girl, what are you doing up here? And then they speak Spanish to her. And she replies in Spanish because the UN. And they're all like, oh, okay. Oh, Gwyneth, you really don't fit in anywhere. And she asks for the address that she's looking for, and the guy points her upstairs. And she gets to the apartment door, and it's covered in police tape. And she takes out her key and puts it in the lock. And it opens.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, you can't get... Your wife is smart enough to work at the UN. She speaks multiple languages.
Right.
She's no slouch.
She's not some dumbass.
Right. So, like, she's also... I mean, I guess he just assumed that she was going to be dead. But it's like, if she lives, you got to assume that she's going to start piecing it together because you know that she's smart.
She's smart. Mm. Like, you can't... Everybody in this is, like, too smart except for Stephen.
Hubris. Well, that was his hubris, his overweening pride.
Always.
He must be brought low.
Steven is in Midtown walking into the bank in sunglasses and leather gloves with a giant empty Barney's bag with a shoebox in it. He goes down to the vault, goes to his safety deposit box, and takes out stacks and stacks of $100, like, bill, whatever, 400 grand that he had. He puts it all in this shoebox. He puts the shoes in his safety deposit box, and I'm like, what's the plan here? But sure. So he has this bag with a box full of money in it, and he gets back to his office, and when he arrives at his office, Emily is sitting in his desk chair waiting for him.
Ooh,
he's shocked, and she says, that's not happiness to see me, is it?
I
love that
ass.
This movie kept turning around lines.
Yes,
people said
I
to
love
each
it.
Other.
It's so satisfying.
It's so satisfying. Why aren't movies like this anymore? And she says, you know, the key to the dead man's apartment was on my keychain. Someone put it there after I killed him, and there's only one person in the world who could have done that. And he says, me. And she's like, why? He says, to protect you. And she's like, from what? And Steven says, your lover, unless someone else sent these pictures. And then Steven pulls out the ransom note that he mailed himself that says, ain't love grand, and all the photos of her and David kissing. And Emily's like, oh my God. And Steven says, David called me 2 months ago bragging about how you're in love, and I already paid him $100,000 to break it off, but he won't. And he's threatening violence. And Emily's like, I don't believe you.
Well,
and
it's Steven also, says, yeah, I just feel like that's an insane, like, you can plant that, but like, once you introduce the photos, it's like, so did you take the photos? Like, he's just playing this. It's too many details.
It's a little fast and
loose. He's sloppy. Like, he's being sloppy.
I don't think he's as neat and tidy as he thinks he is.
I agree.
And Emily's like, I don't believe you. What are you talking about? And Steven says, did he mention Belize? And she's like, oh, he did mention Belize. A thing that never gets followed up on. He's like, his real name is Winston LaGrange. Here's his, you know, criminal record. And he hands her a file. And it's like, this guy is not who you think he is. And she's like, why didn't you tell me about any of this? And he's like, well, I thought you were in love. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I've been putting you through hell. It's over. I'm done. And she's like, is this why your business is in trouble? And he's like, huh? What do you know about business being in trouble? And he's like, yes and no. Like, I can always make more money, but I've certainly been preoccupied with worrying about you and all this. And so Emily's like, oh, okay, yeah. But why did you put his key on my keychain? And Steven's like, oh, well, David was threatening me and us, and he said he was going to hurt you. So I assumed when I saw the body that it was him, that he had come in. But I also assumed that you had given him your key. That's why he was in the apartment. And Emily's like, when would he have gotten it? I came home from work and opened the door. And he's like, no, remember, the door was wide open. You just walked in. And she's like, oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe it was.
Also, like, you're relying on the idea that she's going to trust you that she gave him the key. It's like, bitch, that's insane.
Like, what? So Steven's like, well, he could have even taken it the day before. Maybe he took it off of your key ring. Did you see him the day before? And she's like, yes, we were fucking in the middle of the afternoon. That's when I saw him. He's like, so I panicked when I saw him. I jimmied the lock so it looked like he broke in, but I took what I thought was your key and put it back on your key ring to protect you. And she's like, I don't know. I don't know if this all works for me. Would that work for you? Would that like work? Like,
no.
Would you be like, oh, sure.
I'd be like, that doesn't make a damn lick of sense. But also, I guess if like, okay, yeah, you're telling me David took it off my key ring. I suppose, to me, it starts to fall apart where it's like, you knew this was going on and you didn't confront me about it. I can't trust you. Like, once we've passed that point, you've also been hiding this, then why would I trust anything else you say?
Right. Like, it all just doesn't add up. But she's like, okay, we have to go to the police then. And Steven's like, are you kidding? I paid off a blackmailer. I tampered with a homicide. Like, this is, now we're all implicated in crimes. Like, David could say anything. David could say that I paid him to kill you. And she's like, huh? Is that something? And she's like, what about the man I killed? I killed somebody. What about him? And she's like, that must have to do with David. He's like, are you kidding? There's a million burglaries in the city every day. No one's going to think twice about this. We're fine. We just need to go start over. And she's like, I'm so sorry. The one thing is, my ring is at David's. I left my ring. I'm sorry I lied to you. It's not getting reset. I left it at David's when we were having our daytime sex. And he's like, I'll go get it. Don't worry. And he like grabs the bag with the shoebox full of money because he was going to see David anyway to give him the rest of the cash. And he asks, will you be home when I get back? And she's like, yep. So Steven goes to Greenpoint. He goes up to David's loft. He enters. David is nowhere to be found, but there is a note with a fish hook hanging off, like taped to the wall with a fish hook hanging off it with a ring on it. He says, sorry, Steve, change of plans, Washington Square Park, 30 minutes, don't be late. Which is an insane thing.
30 minutes from when?
Like, right, you don't know when he got
there.
That's
wild.
Also, this is pre-Uber. Like, how are you getting there?
What if he didn't show up? You just wait in the park for hours?
Forever outside? When Steven sees the sign, he grabs the ring and the landline rings and he picks it up and says, I'm on my way. And on the other line is not David, but it's a woman who says like, oh, I'm just calling to confirm your travel plans. And he's like, yep, confirmed. In Washington Square Park, David sees Steven. They meet up and they exchange, you know, they put, he puts the bag on the ground and then David picks up the bag. It's like, just hand it to him. Like, just hand it to him. And in exchange, David gives Steven a small cassette tape. He says it's Steven's greatest hits. And he's like, here you go. And he's like, how do I know there's not copies of this? And he's like, I guess you don't.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
So David walks off and he's kind of like tensely like navigating the city, going through like the subway. He's carrying like almost $500,000 in cash in like basically a paper bag. So like, I don't know. I would have loved to get on the subway with that much money. Because the Penn Station, he gets on the concourse, he goes to a train. There's a train going to Montreal. He has a ticket for, that's his travel plans. He gets on the train. Nobody stops him, but he's like very tense. He gets into his private cabin. He shuts the blind and he's like, okay, I got it. He starts counting the money and he's like stressed. There's a knock on the door. It's just the train worker who's like, oh, here's when the dining car is open. And he like, meanwhile, he has like a gun behind him. He's like, don't bother me anymore. He pulls out a photo of Emily that he has covered in paint.
Of course.
And puts it on a little shelf as a reminder of how much he loves her. But finally, he can relax. He opens the bathroom in his private cabin. Steven jumps out in a clear rain gear like Patrick Bateman and just stabs David in the stomach.
Damn,
and says,
Dave.
How's that for wet work?
Oh. Wow. Could have used this earlier, Steven, I'll be honest.
Yes. Yeah, you could have just done this yourself. And he twists the knife. He grabs David's gun. David is on the ground. He's dying. And he reaches for something from his pocket. But Steven, like, steps on his hand. He's like, yeah, asshole, like, I win. Like, this isn't, you're not winning. It's a receipt from a messenger service for an envelope that had been sent to Emily. And he says, I sent her a copy of Steven's greatest hits.
Ooh.
Obviously, the blackmail tape is in Emily's hands. Steven grabs the gun and takes the picture of Emily. Like, David's dead. Goodbye. He takes his money back and he like leaves and he gets off the train just before it's leaving the station. And Steven comes home and he asks the doorman, has there been a delivery today? And the doorman's like, just one envelope. Your wife took it up with the mail. Steven walks into the apartment. The door is open. Emily is out on the terrace looking at the park. Steven sees the mail and he's like, oh my God. And he like thumbs through it and he's like, okay, here it is. He grabs it, opens it. It's the tape. He slides it into the bag that he's carrying and like goes into his office without Emily seeing. And he's trying to get the cash all the way into his safe just as she walks in. And she's like, did everything go okay? And he's like, oh, I'm stressed. He says, here's your ring. I got it back for you. And he puts it on her finger and he says, welcome home. It's time for a new start. And everything seems fine. It all worked out. He's
great.
Like, let's go to dinner.
Gorgeous.
And she's like, I would love that. We'll go to dinner. He's like, I'm going to take a shower really quick. So Steven goes in the shower and Emily's sitting there kind of like twirling her ring. And she sees the crumpled Barney's bag next to the desk that had the $400,000 in it. And she's like, I don't know about all of this. And she goes and she investigates it. And she sees the empty shoebox. And it's like, that's all right. That's really weird. I don't know what this is. Why would you have this? Steven's in the shower. He's finishing getting ready. Emily's like, hey, what if instead, like, I go pick us something up for dinner? I'll run out really quick. And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. And she's like, oh, by the way, we should change the locks. And he says, why? And she's like, well, I still can't find my key. And he's like, that's a great idea. We'll do it in the morning. So she's like, okay, I'm going to go pick up food. As soon as he feels that she's left, Steven runs to the service entrance, goes to the magnetic compartment that he had put underneath the pipe and finds her key is in there. The guy had put it back after he opened the door. That's why it was there. That's why he ended up taking his own house key, putting it on her key ring. So he rushes out. He goes and he comes back in to try and put it on her key ring. And she walks out of the hallway and is like, I hadn't left. He must not have put it back. Didn't plan on that, did you? Obviously, she knows the whole thing. And Steven says, young David was unpredictable. And she says, maybe you guys will share a cell.
Ooh.
He's like, why? Because of the key? Like, I just found the key you lost. And she's like, you left it for him. And Steven's like, I don't know that guy. And there's nothing linking me to any of this. And she's like, what about the blackmail? He goes, oh, that one letter? That vanished. I don't have that anymore. There's nothing that links me to David. Thing is, Emily, we're just another married couple trying to work things out.
Oh, boy.
And she laughs and she says, work things out. And she pulls out a talk boy, I guess, and hits
Hell
play.
Yeah.
She has found, while he was in the shower, she listened to the tape, and it's the tape of David saying, And then you bludgeon her. That feels spur of the moment. And she's like, work it out. You work it out on your fucking own. This is over. And she goes to storm out of the apartment, but he slams the door. He says, I'll tell you when it's over.
Oh, God.
And she punches him in the eye. He throws her across the room. And he says, the only way you leave me is dead.
Oh, no.
And she turns. She's laying on the ground. He goes towards her. She pulls out a gun, which she had also found in his bag. Shoots him. Hits him in the arm. He grabs her. She scrambles. She almost loses the gun again. And just as he lunges at her one final time, she shoots him in the fucking chest.
Wow. Okay.
The police arrive and survey the scene. And Emily is playing the tape for the detective as he listens intently. And Emily explains, he said he was going to kill me. So I tried to run. Then he attacked you. What else could you do? Like, the detective is like, yeah, you had to kill your husband. Obviously, he's a piece of shit. And he says in Turkish, may God be with you. And you as well, says Emily. The perfect murder.
Wow. Great work. Great work, Gwyneth. Great.
Hallie, what are some fatal mistakes in this film?
Fatal mistakes.
First and foremost, not getting a prenup. When you have $100 million trust,
number one,
you marry a nervous-eyed older man in finance who apparently is unscrupulous. You can't be setting yourself up like this, Emily.
Yeah,
I would say that. And then I do feel like, I don't know, like having an affair wasn't the best idea, but.
No.
I think ultimately the most fatal mistake is marrying Steven. I think ultimately, yes. If you had a different partner, maybe he would have. That's like, if he just been like, I want a divorce, you know, maybe she'd throw a couple million at him. You know, I think it would have been, he wouldn't be dead, at least.
I agree.
What about you?
I think staying in the marriage when it's not working and instead just having an affair with a Greenpoint bad artist, sexy, but bad at art. And I think, again, like Steven believing that he was smarter than a criminal. I mean, I guess like in the end, he was kind of, because David died first.
Sure, but at a certain point, it's like, yes, how smart. I'm just going to stab this guy to death. Like, there's not a ton of intelligence in just... You know, a perfect murder is when you don't get caught. A perfect murder when you just murder someone and then later you get murdered. It's not, you're not getting perfect.
I don't know if that's perfect.
It's not perfect.
I don't know. And Hallie, finally, where would you rate a perfect murder on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I would say I'm going to give it a 1 on the spooky scale because I did enjoy, I mean, like the twists and turns, I can imagine they were thrilling in a way that approached terror, but I would say I'm going to give this an 8 on the thrilling scale. I love the twists and turns. Yeah. I couldn't be happier. I love that Steven died. I thought he would be exposed and sent to prison and brought low, but I'm equally as satisfied by his demise. So, yeah. How about you?
I would give this a 2. It is like the way it's shot and scored, like it's very noir.
Yeah.
And like you kind of know from like the first scene, you're like, oh, this is going to be only fucked up. Like you're never going to see like the good parts of their lives. It's just like pretty dark from start to finish, but like it like there is a lot of like someone just like Steven in particular like appearing out of nowhere in the clock, like he is very sneaky and like they are on edge the whole time in a way that like is kind of like anxiety inducing. But again, 10 out of 10 for enjoyment. Probably a 2 out of 10 for spookiness.
Yeah, love this shit. Would love to do more 90s thrillers. And before we go, we just wanted to use this opportunity, a perfect murder, well, to lead you to our perfect Patreon. And we have a ton of exclusive episodes that are up now that you can look. For example, The Boy Next Door, Hush, Oddity, and I feel like one of my favorite movies of the last 6 months, at least, Clown.
Yes. In addition, there's also a bunch of live shows. If you've not been able to join us for a live show, they are accessible on Patreon if you are a member. And that includes The Strangers Chapter 1, The Watchers, A Quiet Place Day 1, a lot of ones. But Long Legs, Trap, The Substance Coming Soon. We've done so many great live shows. If you've not been able to join us, you can go access all of those on Patreon. If you want to join us at patreon.com/ruinedpodcast.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this one. Thank you, Elson, so much for reverse ruining it. Yeah, what an absolute delight, a treat.
My favorite genre, Michael Douglas.
Well, we'll have to do more.
Mikey D. He has many movies. And I guess all that leaves us is to ask you to please
keep it spooky.
Keep it spooky.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter @ruinedpodcast or join us at patreon.com/ruinedpodcast for exclusive episodes and video content. Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, Dan Powell, and Houston Snyder.
Recorded and edited by Sage Spielman.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.